two, test, 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 1, 2, test, 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 1, 2, 3, test. Hello, are you there? Test, 1, 2, 3.
Exam, exam. Introduction.
Good evening, boys and girls. This is the pseudo-exist. Bob is a woman. Nothing is more fertile under electric conditions than Bob.
Right on.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Church of the Subgenius. Take it away, Bob.
Thanks, Lusherton. Mike.
Bob.
We're on.
Welcome back, Bob. It's been 2 weeks. I missed a week last week. Kent filled in for me, and thank you, Kent, for doing that. And I come back now.
What were you doing last week?
I was working. We were okay. Doing some light work.
Okay, let's just pick up the pace. A lovely little intro there by Marva and Philly via Flusherton. Marva threw her voice. Marva from the Church of Avram, perishing insects daily. Anyways, we've got much to talk about tonight.
A lot to talk about. A busy weekend coming up.
Markowitz Park, the theme park.
A theme will evolve tonight, as usual, and we will accept phone calls. A reminder, you are listening to the Church of the Subgenius Radio Hour now. You stretched it.
Yeah. Thanks to you, Mike.
J.R. Bob Dobbs across from me. My name is Michael Dyer, and we're here for a couple of hours at least.
So let's get those people ready to call in and make their probes, statements, questions, inventories. Not just right this second, but we're looking to hear from Dave, Jim, and Sheila tonight, isn't it, Mike?
Yeah. Let's get right to the meat of the matter. The snowbirds, disaster over Lake Ontario. Bob, how do you feel about air shows?
Well, Anne Murray, you know.
I think she's okay. She parachuted just in time.
Yeah, but as a goddess of guardian angel quality, not too heavy. All right, move on to another moint. I got to tell you something tonight, Mike. I have some things to say tonight. You know, it's important that Barb is here because there's things relevant to her musical bias. She's an agent for Acoustic Space.
Okay, I just wish I could see you. You're so dark.
Oh, okay. Well, just dig the resonant interval. All right, now. What was it? It was The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, right? Remember that? And the author, Douglas Adams, obviously working for various elements and factions in British intelligence. Why? Because the number 42. What was the answer? Oh, we have an interruption. Come on in.
Just me.
It's all right. Come on in. This is actually Philly.
I got you started on this. I might as well sit here.
No. I brought it up and then you supplemented with some relevant
Bob,
filial record.
True.
Oh, okay.
We won't go into that.
Yeah, no, you can correct me later if you phone in. Only on air. Corrections allowed. But, you know, in the book, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, the answer to the intergalactic question was 42, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
the answer to life, the universe, and everything.
Yeah, it was 42. Well, I think it's only now under electric conditions, which has a decidedly acoustic factor in it, that we can explain the meaning of that 42 better than was hinted at by British intelligence via Douglas Adams and the book Hitchhiker's Guide to CKLM. Now, here it is. This is the reason why 42 is the answer. Or maybe if you imagine a question mark with an exclamation mark superimposed over it, that's called the double duty interrobang. It could be both an answer and a question. But here is the significance of number 42. One, there are four aspects. One, living processes are tuned to DNA, which resonates at precisely 42 octaves above the tone, C equals 256 cycles per second, or hertz. All right, living processes are tuned to DNA, which resonates at precisely 42 octaves above the tone, C equals 256 cycles per second, or 256 hertz. Second aspect, all biological processes function in a defined span, which is two musical octaves plus a fourth, in the region of the electromagnetic spectrum that is 42 octaves above the musical tones between C equals 64 and the F above C equals 512. Aspect three, the key characteristic spectra associated with the most fundamental of biological processes, photosynthesis, mitosis, protein synthesis, and vision, form an ordered array with a defined span that maps onto the precise notes of the well-tempered major, minor, major and minor musical scales 42 octaves below. The spectra themselves are the results of careful experimental measurements by biophysicists in laboratories around the world over several decades. Factor four, biological. Mike.
What, Bob?
That's three. Three examples of the proof of 42, right?
We're keeping track.
All right. Fourth.
Three.
Four.
Number four.
Yeah. Biological processes on Earth utilize three qualitatively different forms of electromagnetic radiation: ultraviolet, visible light, and infrared. When the characteristic biological tones are arrayed in their natural well-tempered musical scale, the phase changes or register shifts from one type of this electromagnetic radiation to the next fall in the interval between the F and F-sharp tones. This is the same interval in which trained soprano and tenor voices experience a register shift from the center of the head voice, the second to third register, more than 40 octaves below. There's four aspects.
Well, that's great if you're Johann Sebastian Bach, but what's that got to do with life, the universe, and everything?
Okay, we can go to our callers now.
Yeah, I mean, that wasn't asked. You got to get on the phone, Philly. No, that's not fair. Philly's on the air right now. What do you mean, what has it got to do? Okay, look, a student of living processes reports on new discoveries. That's me. I'm reporting on new discoveries in the harmonic tuning of the biological domain with DNA, which if you switch it around, D-E-A-N becomes Dean, right? Must mean something. With DNA as the tuning fork, precisely 42 octaves above middle C. I mean, there it is. It's the musicality of living processes, and it is a universal pattern. Maybe conditioned by visual space, industrial conditions of Beethoven and Bach's time, but at this point is all we got to work with, eh? Bobby? All right, so... That is the reason why 42. Granted, it comes from British intelligence.
Middle C is arbitrary.
What?
But middle C is arbitrary. It's invented.
Yes, but it was invented with the pattern in mind. It's subconscious. Now we're conscious of it. Much of our activity is has perfect zen to it because of our subconscious tuning. With
there are 88 keys on a piano.
Right. Right.
Tuning with
drawing what we want to us.
Yeah. It's in other words, it all is well in the best of all possible worlds. If you can play music.
You're not convinced.
If you can sing. Anyways, that is going to evoke a lot of response from the listeners, that fact. And now I'm going to go on to another. Since this is the fall season, I happen to notice a lot of kids buying their equipment today in schools, you know, and I was walking around not buying my equipment because I don't have to go to school this year because my grant came through. Yes.
You got another grant?
Yes, another grant from you-know-who. Not British intelligence, but as to start off a new aspect of our show here, many people have asked me what it's like in the Secret Council 10, you know, what kind of language do they talk?
Do you ride horses, play volleyball?
Yeah, those kind of questions. But sticking to the conversation at hand of what we talk about, you know, there are certain terms we use in an effort to mime the ordered universe organized around the 42 octaves. And I, over the next while, am going to give the basic words we use, the basic concepts, and the actual definitions we're using when we're having our probing debates about what to do, whether to fund Marva's Temple or not. You know, these are big questions locally and small questions galactically, right? These things flip, the micro and the macro under electric conditions. So the first word to define the meaning of as we use it, so people can now begin to match with Bob rather than this chaotic making where, you know, people take a stab at what does Bob want, what is his theme tonight, you know, fakes, probes, questions, what is Bob, what is he trying to tell us? Well, I thought we'd bring in a little element of matching. So yes, the first word we're going to use is being. Very important word. You know, how do we at the Secret Council 10 define being?
Being.
B-E-I-N-G. Right?
Bingo was his name.
Okay, Mike. Yeah, see, Mike's used to matching, you know. I mean, he's used to making, and this matching is a stress on him, so we're watching Mike flow through the interval, retrieve childhood unconscious processes leaking through as he makes the register shift from the voice in his throat to the head voice, the second and third register. You ready, Kent? being. Here's how I define it when I'm working with my colleagues on the Secret Council of Ben. Maybe I meant Ben all along. I mean, Ben lost his medal today. The Secret Council of Ben? Would that be? Maybe. But let's go back to 10. See, I started to make already. All right. Being. Traditionally, we came into it with the context of it crudely used in classical materialism, empiricism, positivism, and so on as that quality of existence independent of perception attributed to discrete objects or sense impressions. This quality of existence is usually distinguished from the existence of properties and relationship. In short, the notion of being is situated within the belief that the universe is essentially an aggregation of discrete elementary particles of one sort or another. These elementary particles are treated as the proper independent variables of algebraic expressions, and qualities and relationship are regarded as the derived existences expressed in the grammatical structure of the algebraic formulations. In critical philosophy, which is more what we do rather than the traditional disciplines of materialism, empiricism, and positivism, the attribution of being to self-evident objectivity is identified by the term being in itself. In Hegel and Marx, the self-evidence of discrete being, that is, of elementarities, is absolutely denied. Check Hegel, Phenomenology of Mind, in the preface and the introduction to Chapter 1, or Marx's thesis on Feuerbach. The world outlook of Hegel and Marx locates primary reality in universal processes with respect to which the existence of discrete particulars is merely derivative. That's determinate being. Primary universal being is being in and for itself, the universal process of the form of self-activity, whose development is the consequence of that activity, i.e. a self-subsisting positive. Subsumed within being in and for itself is being for itself, those processes of self-activity whose development is a consequence of action on the universe by such a subsumed process. The paradigm for being for itself is Marx's notion of the class for itself, or the working class for itself. The paradigm for being for itself is Marx's notion of the class for itself. The totality of working class productive activity deliberately directed as self-activity for the development of that self-activity through the mediation of development of the material preconditions of class self-activity, i.e. the revolutionary human practice of the chapter by Marx called Thesis on Feuerbach. That is the beginning of the definition, Marva. I cannot finish it tonight, but that is offering as something to match with when I refer to the word being, which I have never really used yet. But since I may use it now as a more refined dialogue.
But I thought you used it with your colleagues.
Oh, yeah, no, I mean on the air here. That's good to make that point, yes. Mm-hmm. I have not used it here on my show.
Mm-hmm. But in the Secret Council of 10, you have.
Yes, and I'm explaining how I would use it there. But it has never been evoked on this show. The word being, but that is how I would use it. And that's just the first part of the definition. It goes on for another page and a half. So I welcome any people who are willing to engage in an understanding of that definition.
Perhaps that could be tonight's theme.
To write me letters.
Or tonight's phone.
Yeah, because it's a visual medium almost, this matching. So we might have to use letters. We might have to have correspondence with Bob on this level. But let's get back to making as much as we can. Phone in the calls. All right. Now, next topic, back to pattern recognition. You know, one thing about my show is I talk about things that people generally don't understand the relevance of. But you take, for example, I've been nailing Philip Marchand for months here on the show. I mean, Marva, do you know who Philip Marchand is? No. But he's the one who wrote the new biography of Marshall McLuhan. Yeah.
I'm really behind in my Marshall McLuhanisms.
Oh, that's all right. There's no need to keep up. I mean...
I used to see
that it was cover-up. Oh, well, of course you don't feel that way anymore, and you've got slack.
Yeah.
All right. So, yeah. Okay, now the point is that Philip Marchand, I'm slagging him here, not slacking, slagging him through the last few months. And you in Toronto think, Bob, you know, projecting his own subjectivity, unaware of actual events. Well, you know what happened? Philip Marchand is going to be inflicted on you people for the next 10 to 15 years. He has been named as the main book reviewer for the Toronto Star to replace Ken Adachi. who passed away a few months ago. So you're going to have to read his views and reviews of books for the next 10 or 15 years here in Toronto. Again, Bob, ahead of the whole collective consensus. All right? So pay attention to who I talk about. It is imminent. It is anticipatory what I do. All right?
So it was a warning, and now your warning has become true.
Yes, yes. I mean, why would, if most people wouldn't know who Phil is, you know, why is he complaining about him? Well, he's going to be your main reviewer every day and on the weekend section of the magazine section of the Toronto Star every weekend. I mean, you're going to have to look at his opinions. Jeez, you know? I mean, no slack, right? And the guy got it all wrong in McLuhan's biography, but, you know, they promoted that biography to hoik him up, to make him eligible as an author to have some kind of status to review books. All right. Now, a theme that Mike will not let me develop, I brought it up 2 weeks ago, and I will attempt to bring it up again and maybe refine it. But I know Mike will reject it, but let me just iterate it again. All right? See, if I said reiterate again, it's redundant.
Yeah.
So I know, I'm conscious every second of my cerebellar tongue. I'm listening to what I'm saying. I said, let's iterate it again. All right, now let's understand how the Holy Offices relate. How does Frank Zappa, the Holy Office of Music, how does Marshall McLuhan, the Holy Office of Rhetoric, you can have that, Philly, how Linda LaRouche, the Holy Office of Logic, how do they interrelate? Well, obviously, Frank Zappa as an image. Now, all the Holy Offices are images, and they're images as anti-environment. All right? Anti-environmental images. That's their stance. That's their effect. Now, what does the image of Frank Zappa do? It kineticizes visual and acoustic space. All right? Now, what does Marshall McLuhan do? His image tactilizes, emphasizing the tactile sense, he tactilizes visual and acoustic space. But what does Linda LaRouche do? He acoustizes visual and kinetic space. Since he's operating out of the image environment of America, and the bias of the American culture is kinetic manipulative, he acousticizes that American environment, that a visual and kinetic space. So, Frank Zappa kineticizes, Marshall tactilizes, Linda LaRouche acousticizes. I welcome any statements upon this theme if Mike allows us to pursue it. If not, let's go to the next theme, which is, it began with Superman, and this resonates with our call and introduction from Flushington. Just a minute, you got to hear this last Burva. Okay, listen to this. It began with Superman, all right? Then it was followed up with Batman. And then we had, in the interval, Spider-Man. And now we have Bob Woman, which is what Flushington pointed out.
Woman.
Bob Woman.
Woman.
Bob Woman.
Bob Woman.
Bob Woman.
Bob Woman.
Bob Woman.
Yeah, Bob Woman. You can play with it. It's not.
We had some calls last week, and some women called last week, which doesn't happen too often. And Bob claimed he was a woman on air, and one woman questioned.
Yeah, questioned my integrity and questioned my purpose and my direction. All to no avail, of course, because I'm here and she's raising the roof with her $25 donation, so I'm way ahead. All right, Mike, what do you want to talk about? You know, the fact that Jim Bakker had to go to the same Butner, North Carolina mental mind control facility as Larry Flint and Jim and John Hinckley, is that important? No.
We can talk about that in a sec. I'm just a little perturbed that no one has caught up with any of our themes. Usually, Marv, lots of people call, honestly. And I was embarrassed.
Yeah, what is the number?
Maybe I thought maybe it would be a good time to give up the number. No, and that's, I thought perhaps I could interject. As a host, I can do that at this point in time, if you wouldn't mind, Bob.
Yeah, 595-1470.
78.
Yeah.
Thank you. And that's our number, because we're in Studio B tonight, not at Studio A, and so it's a different number, 595-1478. And you are listening to The Church of the Subgenius with J.R. Bob Dobbs.
Another theme? I do have a lot of themes that have been
So tonight is he's talking a lot, so just pick your own theme when you call.
So does this mean that I'm a Bob woman now, because I have my own temple?
Oh, no, no, no.
Good question, Bob.
No, because I'm only the Bob woman. You can be whatever you want to be. But I tell you, Bob's a powerful word, and, you know, you won't really have the 42-octave impact that I do. But you're willing to reincarnate and work your way up or down.
We're simultaneous. You shot a road, eh? I didn't hear you, Marva. Sorry.
Try it again, Marva.
What do you mean, work my way up?
Down.
I'm already there. I have my own temple.
That's right.
We did agree on that.
But you aren't Bob. That's important to know.
So you are Bob and Bob Woman as well?
That's kind of like my movie name. If when this gets made into a movie,
you can have your cake and eat it too.
I can.
You can have to be one or the other.
No. Under electric conditions, we're neither. That's why I emphasize one or the other arbitrarily, because they're both irrelevant. See, we're discarnate.
Let's go to our first caller.
We do have a call, Marva. Thanks for the input, Marva.
Go ahead, caller. Yo. Hello.
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 Oh, hi. You're on the air. Oh, see, they're not listening to their radio, and they have to do that. Because we can't do that. Oh, and there's another line. Are you listening to your radio?
Not at all.
Oh, it's not working.
I'm not able to hear you for some reason on the receiver here. I'm having a...
It's best to turn up your radio a little bit.
To turn it up?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know other stations do it differently, but...
Yeah. Well, thank you. Anyway, you can hear me, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
Wonderful. I just strolled in this evening, and I overheard the portion of your program. I wanted to make mention that your program can be quite disturbing, and that it's very difficult for myself to listen to 30 nonstop minutes of regurgitation and repetitive crap.
It's actually 60.
Not to be overly critical, but I feel that it would be good for your listeners to perhaps comment on your program.
Well, we welcome that. Okay, we up? Yeah, we welcome comments. We are trying to drive our ratings down. We have been quite popular through the summer, and this could cause problems for me, so... We do encourage those who are irritated by the show to comment on the programming this fall to get my ratings down. This is very significant. Obviously, you don't need slack. You've got a lot. Anybody who has the guts to do that to Bob on September 6th when he's introducing new dialogue material is got slack. I commend you. I shake your hand, and don't form your own church. Stay with me. Any other callers?
No, I think that's probably the only caller we're going to have tonight.
Yeah. I think they're offering a theme. Yeah. Slack. Slack.
It's true. We used to be toned down somewhat. We used to be only 30 minutes, and then you slowly extended it minute by minute, week by week.
And if we get enough complaints, maybe we can put it back down to 13
yeah,
seconds
maybe,
again.
And people have been saying, Mike, you know, Bob is talking a lot, but I have very little control over that.
What?
I have very little control over
that. Yeah, that's right, Mike.
If people complain, won't you go to 2 hours?
No. Not at this point. We do, there are many other calls who support us. We are allowing those who, through my psychic ability.
I don't know that anyone's ever called and said those words, that we support you or I support you, Bob. I think that should be made clear. They're just people calling, making inquiries.
Well, their emotions supported me.
Oh, I see.
There's no doubt about that. We do have another caller.
Yeah, another negative caller. Hi. Do you hate Bob? Hello.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air. Not listening to his radio again? You've got to listen to your radio. If we yell, will he hear us?
Hello.
Hi.
Oh, you can hear me.
Yeah, just can you hear us?
I can hear myself now.
Through your radio, good.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
It's a miracle.
Well, yes. I don't know about these Bob women, but
yeah.
I saw Rob Bowman at the Stones concert.
Rob Bowman. Yeah, I know, but...
I think it's a theme but it's a linguistic theme.
Yeah,
I recognize his voice. That's very good, but Rob Bowman, isn't he a programmer at CKLN?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, Rob has a show here.
Oh, this is Rob Bowman calling.
No,
but he's brought up a connection between you and Rob Bowman, and I was just...
Look, Rob always ignores me at staff meetings. I don't know why he has to be brought into this.
Listening to you talk, I could hear Rob Bowman in there.
Is that right?
In there, and...
It's R&B, right? R&B.
And Rob names his show after Captain Beefheart. I know a great influence on you.
Who is a subsidiary Holy Office of the Frank Zappa Holy Office?
Yes. My initials are R&B also.
Is that right? Oh, you sound...
That's true.
Well, you're the one to do it. You called our sensibilities here.
And also, I work for a place called RB.
Okay.
Well, the record meddler.
Well, I have one thing other to mention, too. I can't hear Marva very well.
No, she's sort of in the background.
I'm going home.
She's trying to get away, and she's just...
But she's just waiting for that flash.
Do you have a question for Marva as well tonight?
How are you?
Fine, thank you.
That's good.
Okay, there we are. Stimulating
so
radio.
What was the... So Bob Woman can be switched around to Rob Bowman. Not bad. Come on down and be a guest.
Sure.
Okay. Anytime.
I have to go to sleep now.
All right.
Okay. Thanks
night.
For voting.
Bye-bye.
Night. Okay, another listener ready to stand by for
creativity. That was making. Yeah. I mean, what a fine example of taking the visual medium of the alphabet and just moving it around and coming up with a person.
And that's
I'm
connected
pleased.
Again with our being theme.
Yes, the B, the R, and the B. So reality for the R, B for B.
The R being. The R being.
Yeah, we are being. Yeah, B.
And beings and woe man. Is there any relationship with woe ten? Another being.
Wotan. See, in the book of the subgenius, they say W-O-T-A-N, and it should be Wotan, T-E-N, for the Council of Ten. And the woe of the Council of Ten before Bob was made what he is today, chairman of the Secret Council. So,
while our operators are fielding the calls, you had just touched upon this thing with Jim.
Jim, your favorite.
Maybe we could come back to Jim and talk a little bit about Jim and Tammy. And Jim's seen in the courthouse.
What do you want to know about
everything?
Yeah. Well,
inquiring minds want to know, Bob.
All right. Okay, Marva, you don't need to know about this. Check you later. All right. So, about Jim. You see, if you read in Zappa's autobiography, jazzed out, you can make all the noise you want. Just go. Sorry. No, don't be quiet. If you read in his biography, he points out that a preacher, I think it was a Catholic priest, I'm not sure, I'd have to check my visual facts, but he pointed out that in 1979, the incipient Reagan administration made a deal with the fundamentalist churches the year before the election in 1979, that if those churches, vote for Reagan, then they will bring in a high profile for those televangelists that we witnessed through the early 80s. Now, a year or so ago, this came out in an investigation probe on C-SPAN. And Zappa points this out, that there was a conspiracy to wake up the fundamentalists in the early 80s as part of the Reagan image. Now, I've explained many times, years before, why the Reagan image was appropriate. But dealing with the Jim Backer thing is that George Bush represents the faction that wasn't supporting the fundamentalists. Those were the Bolsheviks. George Bush represents the old Rockefeller cartel, organized under John McCloy until he passed away recently. That's after the Rockefellers were murdered themselves. With the removal through Contergate, Reykjavik, and the superior image-making of Gorbachev, the Bolshevik-controlled Pentagon and their surrogate televangelists had to be moved out. And you see Jerry Falwell closed down the moral majority a few days ago, officially. And you also have Jim Backer, the pop star of the 80s, in many levels, not just, we'll call it top-down pop star, one imposed on the populace, right, through software design. We see he has to be removed because the Bush faction is moving him out and the church people. But, of course, during the trial, there couldn't be problems, and he has to be controlled and reprogrammed. So he has to be shipped off to the Butner, North Carolina, mind control research facility that did the same number on Larry Flint and John Hinckley before. Now, how does this go? How does this relate to today's headlines? Well, because any part of White House power includes Dope Incorporated, then you have, over the past year, the shifting from power of people like Jim Wright and John Tower and all those people related to the Bolshevik-controlled Pentagon and the fundamentalists. But you also have to shift out the dope market, the dope controllers, the dope mafias, which supplement the White House income. That's why you're going to have George Bush move in and move out those dope incorporated groups that represent the Bolshevik faction, which he's not a part of. And we're going to have a replacement with the old George Bush faction. And that is why what happens to Jim Bakker goes hand in hand with what's going in Colombia. It's a well-orchestrated theatrical event for your consumption, but doesn't relate to you in your discarnate state.
Ed, it's been this fight against drugs has been something ongoing. I mean, as far back as Nixon.
Yeah, Nixon hoiked it up, but he represented one faction.
Yeah, but every president since has
their own fight.
Promised to clean up and to fight dope ink, as you put it, nicely. And yet another president is doing the same thing. And
you notice Bush says he's going to change the rules. I mean, you've had the same dope ink group working for 10 years with the Reagan gang, and then you have a whole new power structure coming in, so the rules are communicated to be changed, right? And that is a definite shift here compared to the ongoing battles, the failed battles early under the Reagan administration. So mm-hmm. We have another call.
Yeah, we do. Go ahead, caller.
Hello, Bob.
Yeah.
I was going to make some comments about the original beginnings of our drug war that we're experiencing right now.
Okay.
This is from Abby Hoffman. That was a big crackdown year in 1969.
Yeah.
Nixon was already into Operation Intercept and everything. There was a major big war, and one of the 12 major wars on drugs in this century was happening then.
Yes.
There was a symbol of the Youth International Party, John Sinclair, because he was a leader of the White Panther Party.
In Detroit.
They were Yippie affiliates in Ann Arbor.
Yeah.
He was given 10 years in jail for either passing a marijuana cigarette in a circle to a narc or selling him to. I'm not exactly sure about that. Anyway, the sentence was way outrageous. It was obvious that they were going after him because he was a political leader as well. I told Michael and Artie, we have to do something about legalizing marijuana. Making a case for that isn't fair for people who are smoking marijuana to be put away. Because you've got 500,000 people here, 90% of whom are smoking right off the bat, and we have the power of the people. There was being demonstrated. No one's being arrested at Woodstock, no way. I don't think so. And I walked up to the microphone and I started giving a quick rap, which I'm good at. 400,000 of our brothers and sisters are in jail for doing no more than what we're doing on the Hill. It's only fair that we are helping out. We are the Woodstock Nation. We are one. And I noticed the mainstream Muzak right now is saying that the only results produced by Woodstock are dead bodies. The Pentagon gave a list of it on the mainstream news the other night.
Yeah.
Crazy.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
If you follow for the that means fall and follow, the software imagery presented in the major media, you will have no slack, right?
For sure. The fringe is where it is.
That's right, fringe. We're on, remember the 200 Motel soundtrack leading into Jimmy Carl Black? On the fringe of a Jimmy Carl Black. Remember that? The fringe is the important word there. Yeah, you know that there is no fringe, though, under electric conditions. There is no center margin situation. Do you understand that? Do you want
We almost all become the fringe.
Yeah, we are all in the center, in the middle, and on the fringe at the same time. It's called electric discontinuity. It's the principle of the new matter now. That is the basic structure of electric conditions. So
it's all one web.
No, web implies a connection. That would be the visual sensory vision of it, the visual sensory metaphor or design, a web, hence the fear of conspiracies and paranoia today. But the other sensory factor is the acoustic, which is not a web. It is decentralized. A web is kind of like a center margin structure. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That goes in juxtaposition and parallel, both compatible and complementary, to the acoustic effect of everybody feeling they're in the center and super discarnate, super angel. Now that interplays, those two factions, two sensory modalities interplay, and that's what we call tactility. So I'm all about tactility and the interval, so that you can celebrate the conspiracy and the mainstream as well as the fringe, and the complementary feeling that you are everywhere. You follow what I'm saying?
Sure. When you're on the airwaves, you're everywhere.
Yeah, you know that. And you're inside as well as outside everything. You're inside. You're not in my ear. You're inside the most central being of my central nervous system.
All right.
But I think you understand that. I recognize that quote. That was reprinted somewhere, some magazine.
Yeah, it's actually from our star.
Yeah, that was the Woodstock weekend.
I'm getting poisoned by the poisonous ink.
Yeah, wear gloves when you read the newspaper. You definitely have to do that.
Yeah.
You remember Hercule Poirot in the famous French detective in somebody's, detective fiction? Do you remember that character, Murder on the Orient Express?
Oh, yeah.
And he wore gloves, you know, what was that, 80 years ago? He was a smart man. He had a sense of ecology there.
Yeah, and definitely ahead of his time.
But I don't think you are wearing your gloves, are you?
Not tonight.
That quote comes from that special article. They featured a couple of young people, I suppose, who resented the yuppie takeover of the media, right? They didn't like the emphasis on Woodstock. Remember that article? In the same...
I guess they were just confused by the images that the mainstream media is creating right now.
They lost their slack, made it a beef out of it, you know, when they should have just totally ignored it.
Mm-hmm.
Or come up with a totally original form of comment. In other words...
An esoteric one, at least.
Yeah. That's right, because, you know, our critics don't even ignore them. You know, respond to them. Don't ignore them, but respond in a way that maintains your decentralized, discontinuous integrity. In other words, don't match, make. In other words, we got to understand the significance of the fact that people who made that movie on Woodstock weren't able to have a reunion this summer because the rights to the word Woodstock are owned by Warner Communications. That's amazing. That's ownership of a word, a term. And under electric conditions, nothing can be bought, sold, or stolen under electric conditions. So you've got people faking ownership. That maybe we could get mad over that. If there was any agenda that Bob would advocate on a level of violence, it would be to get rid of this feeling that anybody owns anything under electric conditions. Not possible.
Enslaving the spirit.
Yes, that's right. The discarnate spirit, too. You ever listen to Garrett Dean in the play Who's Forgotten Furry Lind?
I'm not sure, no.
Okay, well, listen to CKLN regularly. For the next time it's played, you've got to listen. You're a kind of person who would really respond to Garrett Dean. It's one of the holy offices. All right?
All right, Bob. I'm glad you're still with us.
Yeah, I know that you don't support the original caller, the one who complained about my show.
Yeah, I hope that's self-explanatory, Bob. You're the most important show in Toronto right now.
Oh, thank you. You're going to be in the next promo. Thank you very
Thanks,
much.
Colin.
See you, Bob.
See you, Richard.
Oh, Richard?
No.
No.
Maybe.
Maybe a friend.
Could be. I don't know. Now, that's...
Nice
that's
call. A nice spiritual call. It touched upon all our themes at any given point. It's interesting about Woodstock because I heard somebody comment on Woodstock and, you know, how the film appears to be just this kind of roving montage of images and sound, but in fact, it was a totally controlled project from beginning to end. that there was a lot of money poured into. Were you telling me this? It was somebody else. I don't know. I got this information.
I could have told you that, but whoever was telling
me. The idea that the film itself was just made by these little hippies who happened to have a 16mm camera. They just kept, they happened to have a million feet of film on them. But of course, they say that the film was, again, it would have been Warner's money. All the money was channeled in through Warner's, who acted as a production company on, you know, on the recording side and on the filmmaking side. And in fact, just gave these, they were a professional filmmaking team. They had all the money, all the film they wanted. And so, but they manipulated the product to look or to reflect the spirit of Woodstock. And anyway, I found that interesting.
Well, that's exactly what happened. Basically, Woodstock signaled that the counterculture would be big business. Mm-hmm. And it became marketed as a major software image, as an image of anti-environmental action.
Yeah, exactly, with the facade of it being...
Yeah, an image. Had more, but it had more power than anything that was done on a local, earthly level, mm-hmm. In media terms. It had more power because it occupied a lot of people's imagination for 4 to 5 years in the early 70s.
Yeah.
See, that's why the new Esperanto is the media, and it has been hijacked. We have been hijacked. It's unbelievable how our spirit, as our last caller pointed out, had been hijacked by a major military operation. Woodstock, like any form of entertainment, is a military operation. And that's why I say go home. Do not go anywheres, because it's all oriented to war. Not that war is bad.
Nope.
But it is war. And that word, that icon, gets too much emphasis today.
Well, why do you say war is not bad, necessarily?
Well, did you ever read the Bhagavad Gita? You know, where the God explains to the mortal that at times of great conflict and injustice, you do have to take on that polarity and kick the... slack out of them, you know? I mean, I've declared war, you know that. There's a war going on here, but it is a subtle war. It's the new kind of war. All the generals are preparing for the last war. That's why my war is, you know, so successful.
It's sneaking up on them.
Yes, it's an invisible environment. And therefore, there is a war going on, but not the war that you can imagine, either hardware or software. This is not software warfare, what we're doing here.
So then George Bush has declared war against this country.
He's fighting the last war.
Exactly. You know, and it's interesting because he doesn't, he refers to, or I heard him or someone refer to the drugs he's concerned with as hard drugs. So I'm wondering what the discrepancy is. Does he mean hard drugs, i.e. heroin, cocaine versus pot? Liquor? What's the discrepancy between hard and soft drugs?
Well, software was the hidden ground image-wise in the 60s, therefore the preference for soft drugs. In the 80s, with the retrieval as nostalgic form in the West of left hemisphere visual values, you move back into a hard-edged reality, private entrepreneurship, therefore the image of hard drug was hoiked up. All right, so there's the difference between the decades. But I think hard drugs, in his case, would mean those who make a lot of money out of it. They turn drugs into hardware. Not that money's bad, but I don't need to explain that like I did war. I just said that. Not that money's bad. Let's take our caller, Mike.
Yeah, you are listening to the Church of the Subgenius Show. My name is Michael Dyer with J.R. Bob Dodd. Last 15 minutes of the show, and we have a phone call. Hello.
Excellent.
I don't know if it's the X's, though.
No, I said excellent.
Oh.
Could be certainly in tune with the theme tonight. It has a nice slack-filled, spiritual, soft, wavy quality. See, like, people would think this is scripted. This was not planned. It's just the resources are evoked. This is the theme tonight. Casual wafting ebb and flow. Don't you like the sound of someone grabbing their phone? It has a hard yet squeaky, spongy quality, which is sort of like tactility. That's the closest to tactility I've ever heard, is when someone scrapes a phone. You know what I mean? Or when they try to hang up your phone on an answering machine. You get that cardboardy, echoey quality. Do you know what I mean? I like that. It's a sticky, you know?
Hello?
Yes. You're on.
Hello, I can't hear anyone because I don't have a radio.
Marva.
If you're, if you can hear me.
Marva went home. Yeah, we can hear you.
You're, oh, how can we talk to her?
I'll call back.
That's okay. Oh.
Maybe she doesn't know how to organize the sound effects with hearing on the radio. So, that sounded like Marva to me. And that's neat. Marva went home to get on the air, but I think she's going to make a theme, though. I think she's going to tell us something. So anyways, Frank kineticizes visual and acoustic space. That's why he said on Hot Rats, this movie for your ears. The movie medium is an extension of the eye and the foot, kinetic space. And, of course, Marshall McLuhan tactilizes visual and acoustic space, and Lyndon LaRouche acousticizes visual and the kinetic space.
I'm surprised we haven't had any comments on that, actually. I thought that would raise the most...
Well, I don't think the Holy Offices are very popular, and I think we're talking to the converted. I think a lot of our listeners understand me, and they don't think there's any point in responding. They're hoping for new dupes to call in and see what newness. But I would like Jim to call in and give me some of those quotes from a Panic Encyclopedia. I'm ready to respond, Jim. Where are you? Maybe Marfa ain't going to call back. I think let's get serious. Let's list off. How about another dead person from Contragate? Let's go into that.
It's been a while.
Yeah. We did former Iranian President Mohammad Ali Raji 2 weeks ago. Now we come to another dead person, Richard Beale, Special Assistant to President Reagan for National Security. Died in his 30s around November 3rd, 1984 in Washington, D.C. of a heart attack. This is related to the Irangate situation. Richard Beale had performed the sophisticated computerized October surprise study before the 1980 election, which revealed that the Reagan-Bush campaign had to prevent President Carter from bringing the hostages home between October 18th, the night William Casey and George... Special Assistant to the President for National Security, Beale had consolidated national security-related information from the Pentagon and governmental and military intelligence agencies for the first time in U.S. history in a sophisticated computer used by the White House and National Security Council. Oliver North had access to one of the computer terminals of this newly integrated system. There it is, another dead body from Irangate, Richard Beale. Is that your background or someone call in, Mike?
That's our background.
Okay, nice. I should continue the definition of being, or let's deal with Dave. This is a guy named Dave who wrote me a letter. And his last question is, if the imaginative faculty is not embedded in any sensory operation or technological extension, which I've maintained, how does imagination change when it is used to express its imaginings? Its imaginings electronically. How does imagination change when it is used to express its imaginings electronically? Mike, you got any idea how to answer that?
You got any clues? Give a stab at it, Mike.
No.
Because I could go into it many levels, but if you give me some effort, some, you know, statement. Look at Philly, so despondent. What's going on? Good, okay, yeah. If you could input some syllable to give me a direction, a level.
Well, reread it again, Bob.
If the imaginative, I've always said that imagination is that faculty not embedded in any sensory operation or technological extension of the sensory apparatus. Then how does imagination change when it is used to express its imaginings electronically? In other words, how does imagination change when it's in the electronic medium?
I wouldn't think it does change.
Huh. That's right, Mike, because if it's not embedded, then it's not changed. It is just aware of the nature of the ground.
It's more sort of free-floating, and it just adopts. But it doesn't change. I mean, it just adopts.
It's that same point of perception, detached perception, not embedded in the medium it's using. So if it's using the electronic medium, it will not be embedded in the electronic medium's causes and effects. So you're right. It does not change, but he could mean it changes in the sense that it changes in relation to the electronic medium, which has a tactile quality. So the imagination would have to provide some kind of metaphor to express the causes and effects of tactility, the basic nature of the electric medium. And we have another call?
Yeah, it might be Marva again. Let's All right. see who's there. Hello.
Hello, Radioland.
Hello.
Yes.
You're there.
Go ahead.
Bob,
yeah.
Give us the inside word on what is the war on America.
You want me to give you the inside word?
Yeah, the details to last night's plan.
Right, the war on America is the word itself. Today, especially since the radio environment, the word has become a drug. The spoken word is a drug, George. All right?
George Bush.
Yeah, the war on drugs. The
and
war
Bush.
On America. That really works
Bush
well.
Bush whacked.
Bush whacked. Yeah, I mean, he got a... See, Reagan could be the cowboy. Bush can't be because he's got that image effect of being bushwhacked resonating in his name. So I don't think any of his wars via the verbal statement on America will bear any long-term problems for any of us.
And he smiles too much.
Like Joe Clark used to. That's right.
How can we take a man seriously when he smiles when holding up a giant bag of crap?
Because he's actually not as good at being schizophrenic like Ronald Reagan.
He's not a trained actor.
That's right. But he is imposed on us because he represents the secret government, the spider of visual space, which is only necessary today. We've imploded that much that all actions are imploded into one man or woman, and that is Gorbachev, with Bush following in with a fake second. Okay, now... That's right, you're right. And the behind-the-scenes people, before they moved onto the scene, like George Bush and KGB man Gorbachev, had to operate their effects violently through assassination. But they don't need to do that now. They don't assassinate the White House, they assassinate us. That's the violence today. The taking away of our privacy via electric saturation. George, so you got the war in America. Anything you want to say?
Where did the U.S. troops go first?
Do you know that my buddy on the Secret Council 10 was in Guyana about 2 months ago, and the locals told him that it's very well known there that American and Russian troops work together there. Okay, in the third world, they are often worked together. Now, who are these so-called American uniforms and Russian uniforms other than Dr. Beter's scenario of Bolshevik-controlled Pentagon, the old Bolshevik group bringing over their Russian troops that they've stolen from Gorbachev's native groups, merged with the Pentagon. So your question, George, is about, what was the question? Where are the troops? My answer had something to do with your question. Yeah, where are the
You're
troops?
You're not going to answer the question, are you?
Where do they go first?
Well, where do they go?
When the plane takes off, where do they land?
What does their boarding pass say?
Smoking or non-smoking?
Well, I don't think they're using visual hardware terms. You remember that the war...
Are these going to be out-of-body invasions?
Yes, the discarnate invasion. In other words, Bush will have us looking for hardware invasions in the third world while he is invading us via software daily. That's the red herring. There will be no hardware use of the military. There won't be. It is just entertainment, George.
So tonight's theme is spot the red herring.
Yeah. Do you like? Can you hear that music in the background, George?
If I can hear it, everyone can hear it.
Yeah, I like the resonance of Stang's show in the background. I think actually Stang is good as background. I think we found a place for him. Yeah. George, is there anything you'd like to tell us?
I wanted information, and I...
You got it.
We'll give you your money back, sir, if you're not totally satisfied.
Please.
See, George, I think you...
How Canadian.
George, you're a very good participant in the show, but you emphasize too much the mainstream news, Zach. You know, you're always bringing up what Bush is doing. Try to bring up something obscure, like your own personal experience in India, for God's sakes. Tell us something there that Bob could wax eloquent on. Don't bring up these major... I do not want to be a robotic commentator on the word that makes the market, you know?
A clearinghouse.
You brought up Jim Baker.
Yeah.
Well, Philly.
You're way out of line, Philly. Get in line, Philly. Jim Baker was important. No, George, I would say George emphasizes the political kind of questions. Reagan, Bush, you know, a bit of business thrown
top
in.
Top down guy.
Top down, yes. Whereas Jim Baker is a little more interesting. He was the pop hero of the 80s. And
I gave you the green bob to run with last time, and you didn't take it. Ooh, drum solo.
Yeah.
Any final comments, Bob?
Is the time up?
Yeah.
Oh, I just think I'd like to thank Marv for putting in that wafty, pleasurable music because it kind of fit the resonant theme of our time, which is this time, which was one of rather casual chat.
It was tonight, was it? It was like a fireside chat.
Yeah. The way it's listed in the CKLN program, Fireside Chat. We actually did one tonight. I think it was friendly. And
if you're going to leave George stranded.
Yeah, let's just leave George hanging there. Hanging in the middle.
I'm enjoying the interval.
Untouched by the web.
Will you be here to take personal calls as always?
Yeah. I will.
Oh, and you too. We'll conference.
Private therapy via George through Bob. I don't think there was anything to talk about other than we'll see everybody at Markowitz Park on Saturday and have a good time.
Yes, I guess we will. And I'm going to put on a 60-minute record and
go home and prepare.
Go out
prepare
on
your cone, Mike.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you, George.
CKLM 88.1.
Thank you, listeners. I thank all those who didn't call in. Keep the ratings down.
That celebration certainly is exciting, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And we're very happy that our research has got a small part in that kind of exploration. So I guess we've shown you about all that we have here right now. Do you have any more questions?
A Saturday morning visit with a scientist. Interesting? Yes, but it was much more.
Sometimes I'm afraid. Why?
Recognize, know that it's there. They know this extremely important. And yet they resist. Recognize, resist. And certainly they aren't willing to talk about it.
The lid was about to pop. And I was with my longtime partner and brother-in-law, Bunkle Ledbetter, waiting for the big blowout.
Uranus, my foot.
Somebody at the Pentagon giving you the soap again?
That's the Milbank Pedley sightings. Colonel Rufflefeathers and the Air Force claim the pilot mistook a celestial body, such as a bright star or a flashing root beer sign, for a UFO.
Oh, whitewash, if you ask me, Bunk. It's this damn secrecy. If only they'd tell us what's really going
on. Careful, retired Lieutenant Major, or you'll pound your fist through your glass showcase containing your citations for outstanding military service in the Fort Dirge, Kentucky Motor Pool, 1944.
Listen, a new sighting is coming in on the saucer hotline.
The sighting location is Rococo, New Mexico. Witness, Buzzy Bonami. Occupation, roadside vendor of useless tourist information. Cattle skulls with clocks in their foreheads.
Sir, my wheels from pay dirt. Let's check it out.
Hi, John McCarthy.